For May the 27th, 2016, we talk about Uncharted 4, Rocket League's push for cross-compatible multiplayer, and we ask you your opinions on game guides and hints. Welcome to Level 151. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Myersmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I am so sorry about last week. I will personally take responsibility as I had a case of the garbage guts.
How dare you ever get sick? You directly control that.
Well, I probably shouldn't have been going around licking those doorknobs. Yeah, I shouldn't have eaten that room temperature ceviche. Yeah, I fucked up.
Add more lemons next time.
The citrus cooks the shellfish. So yeah, but we're here, we're back. I've actually played a game this time that I'm not going to talk about on Watch Out for Fireballs.
Woo-hoo.
I know, right? Gasp and shock. Oh, one big thing that we missed out on, last week we launched the wiki.
Yeah.
Sugarbone made it on.
I know, like there's a whole saga
in like, grand fashion. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh shit, I actually have an update for that, so I guess it'll be up by the time this podcast drops, but I tracked down one of Dennis's old fan fictions and linked to this thing. I also tracked down the highlight reel from when Dennis and I were featured on ESPN.
Oh shit, yes. Whoa. When you guys were on the cruise ship.
Yep. I mean featured, a couple of shots of like us running with our names along the bottom, and then like a brief like blurb at the end. But I mean, it does have us like dramatically sprinting into the finish line and stuff, so yeah.
Oh, cut some Chariots of Fire over top of that bad boy.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So I wanted to find I called up my parents, and checked if we could find a video of us in drama.
Oh yeah, like the
particularly that what was it, Hard Candy or whatever that.
Oh,
sketch.
where I was like just yelling at you all the time. Yeah. Yeah.
That would be amazing.
I think I posted that picture too of me like glaring down at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a repository for all this stuff, and I just it's a thing we joked about a lot because we never expected anybody to do it, but then people did it, and there's an article it's on there really that's cool. Like Cole is unstuck in time or Cole's childhood, and I'm just with some measure of dread looking at just kind of the accumulation of the things I've revealed about myself.
This is where it all comes home to roost,
I suppose. Yeah, I mean, yeah, so all that. So I'd like to thank Jala Prendes, Chase Greenlee, Jeremy Greer, Allison Baker, Sam Bear, Michael Gibb, Eric C, Eric Plaisance, Noah DeBSA, I think, Devin Vindland, Brian Wade, Alex Derrida Newby, Braden Cameron, and Nick Glauber for contributing to that wonderful thing. I don't know, like it's pretty great.
Yeah, that's really
so great. Good.
Also, I would like to, in terms of like life achievements or whatever, I feel like the wiki is a pretty good one, but I think another good one with the Sugarbone thing is we officially have fan art.
Pretty good. Yeah. So go check that out. That's wiki.duckfeed.tv. I don't know. Super, super, super grateful for that. Yeah. So otherwise, anybody have some banter for the beginning here?
We could talk about Kenny Loggins some more.
Yeah. In the pre-roll, we were talking about like being banished to the cyber zone. And then Ben asked like who would write that song, Danger Zone. I said Kenny Loggins. And that is that joke that you
Trust me, guys, it was fantastic.
It was wonderful in the moment. In fact, I may just cut that in there.
What do you like better, the Cyber Zone or the Danger Zone?
Nah, they're both pretty good.
Cyber Danger is my favorite.
I don't even know what to say right now.
You got to teach your kids to watch out for cyber danger.
I'm sure that's some kind of PSA. Like that's been used, in fact. Ooh, cyberdanger.com. It is internet security information blog.
Well, good.
Trying to think of who would do Cyber Zone. It'd be like Kenny Logginsons.
No, it's Kenny Loggins.
Oh damn, that's good. Kenny Loggins is almost a title worthy, but I don't know if this is material that makes it on the show. I doubt it. So,
well, yeah, we have been away, so let's get to it. We've got all the usual segments here, the segs, with the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and we're gonna start with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let's see here. I want to start out. Let's go with David. What's yours?
Sure. So it's been announced that the Xbox One version of Rocket League is going to soon be able to play cross-platform. The update to do so is actually coming today, which will be several days. Shit.
It will have been out for a couple of days by the time
By the time you hear this. The PlayStation version's been able to play with PC players for a couple months now, and now the Xbox players are going to be able to do so. However, the Xbox players and the PlayStation players are not going to be able to play
with each other. Yeah, the Venn diagram will look like a water molecule.
Right, because Xbox thinks we should all come together, but not that close together.
Not those filthy Sony people.
Right, exactly. Also, the article describes this as RC cars meet soccer games. I resent that. I choose to believe that this is a game of actual full size cars with rockets strapped to their back.
Do they ever provide anything for scale?
I don't think so.
A soccer ball.
I mean, it could just be like a gigantic. You ever play big ball volleyball in gym class?
That's
could
true.
Could be a situation like that.
Yeah, I'm assuming that a future where rocket powered cars is a dominant form of entertainment is also a future where they can make giant soccer balls.
I could see the argument for it being RC cars if you think of the ball as Wheatley from Portal 2.
That has to be a mod at some point.
It looks strikingly similar.
Yeah. Well, this is cool. More people being able to play with each other. Like, just deepen that pool, really.
Competition's going up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if this, like, I don't know. Yeah, I think, did we have this conversation last time if this at all, like, deepens the possibility for this becoming like a pro gaming type game?
I don't know. I mean, we've mentioned it in that same breath as like this is something that could potentially become that. I don't. It'd be cool. Like I like the idea of something goofy like this being successful in that realm, as opposed to I guess like League of Legends isn't very serious, but. I don't know, like something this whimsical seems like a net positive.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it would be a more fun game to watch for pro gaming as opposed to say like Counter-Strike or something.
Yeah.
Like, I follow ESPN Esports on Twitter, and if their like percent of headlines dedicated to a game is any indication, then Rocket League is already like a huge esport because They post a lot of articles with like recaps of games and highlight reels. So it might be that it's big and we're just not plugged into it.
Yeah.
That could be.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be the first to admit I'm not really plugged in is a good word for that.
Yeah.
Still paid.
Not plugged thing into too, the cyber zone.
If you watch like two pros play one another, I think it's kind of hard to pick up on like the technical aspects of it where it's like you kind of take the aerial shots for granted unless you've played the game and realize how hard it is to do
it's
that.
It's like, oh, this looks easy.
Yeah.
I mean, like...
Just like NASCAR.
to do like a Pele bicycle kick or something, probably, you know, like, oh, he makes it look easy. I mean, that's pro athletes, right? They make it look easy. I would never.
My second grader could do that.
Yeah, like by accident, like, but not intentionally, maybe. Like if your second grader just throws a tantrum and then there happens to be a soccer ball headed toward him, like, you know.
I still feel like even if by accident they flip and freaking bicycle kick a soccer ball, that's still pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, you still, you'd still talk about it.
It might be a monkey. I'm sorry I had to break it to you.
He's human to me. Yeah, my monkey baby. No, so I need to do a little bit of introspection because I said like, oh, like a, like, you know, Rocket League, like a pro athlete. And then like immediately I felt the need to say, not actually like, like to hedge and equivocate, like a skilled player.
I think I'm entirely fine with that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's, it is a, I don't know. It falls under the similar, like the similar banner of like, oh, it's fun to watch people be good at stuff. Right. And also, yeah, it's just, yeah, they're pros. I don't know. And you just, I would never call like a pro bowler a pro athlete, I guess.
No, neither way.
Yeah.
Ouch.
We're about to get so much.
We can go into that, but this is going to be a repeat of like David explains his views on art.
Yeah. And well, we've had that conversation a lot too about like, oh, what is esport?
Yes. I want to interject with bowling and disc golf are my two favorite sports because you do not have to be like crazy in shape to be awesome and be a pro at them.
Yeah, I mean, it's like darts or pool or something like that. Just like they're fun games to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like basketball is a fun game to play. I don't know.
Yeah, no one is a basketball professional, though.
I'll be totally honest, like, and not honestly here, not saying this to be like down on basketball. I do not get basketball at all.
Like, how do you feel about hoops and Rocket League?
It's
Rocket League basketball.
No, fair enough. No, it's just like a sport. Like, you know, like I'm not a big fan of football, but like I kind of get it. You know, I can watch it and stuff like that. I do not. I don't get basketball.
So that's weird. I'm 100% the other way around. Like I will watch some basketball, but like football is very difficult to like
NBA get, or college basketball, not to the sports cast
either.
I think the thing for me is I have trouble with like the I guess what I'd call like semi-contact sports.
So like to distinguish, so something that sits between say like football and tennis,
right? Exactly. Yeah. Where it's like, you know, you're allowed to make contact with them, but not too much.
Yeah.
And I guess I also don't understand the thing of where, like, the fact that, like, as far as I can tell, like, intentional fouls are like, an accepted part of basketball.
Well, I mean, you could say the same thing about, like, headhunting in football or, like, flopping in soccer. Like, any of that. Like, it's... You know,
well,
it's
like
an unfortunate part of the game.
Football, if you get caught, I mean, there's pretty dramatic consequences.
Yeah.
Or at least
an entire city turns on you and disgraces itself. Cincinnati.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying anything's wrong with this, but I'm just saying I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like for me, it's just I don't know. This isn't a sports cast.
Yeah, fair enough.
And you know, all told, I'm not that invested in anything anyway. So, Dennis, what you got for us?
Yeah, I've got an update on the Valkyria Chronicles. They're Azure. What's the second part of the name? Azure Revolution.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is the new game. I guess they're doing a remaster of the original, and then they're also doing this Azure Revolution, which is like the next step in the series. And they did a demo in Japan and got very, very strong feedback that they had strayed too far into action game territory.
Huh.
And I watched a bunch of videos of gameplay on this, and I completely agree with that feedback just from watching it. The original Valkyria Chronicles... that everyone kind of loves is very much a turn-based RPG where your movement is not necessarily dictated by a grid, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like for your turn, you get a chance to move around freely for a certain amount of time or to use a certain number of action points.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're an idiot and you run in a circle, you can waste your entire, you know, turn that way. But it's not, you know, hey, I can move three squares. It's like, hey, I can move so many feet, and you can spend that, you know, however you want, which resulted in a game that still kept that turn-based XCOM zeitgeist, but felt very unique and kind of its own. So that's what people know and love. What they put out in this demo is very much like the shittiest third-person shooter I have ever seen. Like a clunky third-person shooter with even more clunky one-on-one combat sequences. Like it's just, or hand-to-hand, excuse me, combat sequences. So it just, everything about it looks just painful and manufactured and having nothing to do other than like artistically with the previous game. So I'm not the only person to think this. Like I said, a ton of people gave this feedback. And it sounds like they are actually going to be making significant changes to the game to make it more RPG-like, which in this case means more like the original games. So they're going to up the number of members in your party. Basically, in the demo, you had a main character that was then followed around by two other characters that acted as kind of like NPC support, almost like an XCOM The Bureau game.
Nobody
actually
played that.
Probably. No, I played that. Hey,
really disappointed that game was bad.
For the one person, for the one person who played XCOM The Bureau, this felt a lot like that. Anyway,
honey, I don't know why I said that. Come back. Yeah. Sorry, I really don't know why I said that.
It's true. No one did play it, and even I didn't finish it. Where was I going with that?
So this seems bad that a game company is behind the audience, right? Because you would think that they shouldn't be responding. Like, they should come out with something that the audience would enjoy, right? And like, if they're being directed by like customer feedback, then that's probably a bad sign, right?
I mean, yeah. I feel like it's better than the alternative, which is like game companies ignoring the audience, which is normally what we get.
I feel like it's two separate issues, which is, okay, make it like it was before, which whatever, but like, oh, you guys took a risk and it just totally didn't pay off.
It's yeah. Like, oh, so what I would say is the problem is with the way they pitch the game. Well, no, the main problem is that the gameplay looks horrible and clunky. So take that, set it aside. Let's say it was a really tight action game. You pitch this as the next step in the Valkyria Chronicles series, and it's totally not that, other than, like I said, artistically, it's got some similarities.
I'm opposed. Like you can make these shifts. Like
sure.
They don't need to be hidebound.
Communicate that at all. If they had said, hey, we are going to do an action game in the Valkyria Chronicles universe, great, do that. We might be kind of on the same path here. I just didn't articulate it right. So if you tell people you're going to do that, absolutely, you should be able to do that. And I think some great stuff can come out of that. Yeah. But what they did is say, hey, this is the next step in the series, and then let people kind of find out on their own that it's this crappy action game instead of what they
were
expecting.
Okay, take away crappy. If they found out that it's this action game.
Yeah. Then in which case, I think the people who really liked Valkyria Chronicles are not necessarily the crowd that cares anything about action games.
Could they be made to care by like this, like the team that made their preferred, you know, hybrid turn-based RPG?
Yeah. You know, well, like, and that's where the part that the fact that it's crappy starts coming into play.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I think that you're absolutely right. Communication is a big part of this, because what it feels like, and like I'm going to simplify what you're saying. If what it feels like is the developer behind this is taking away the initial like the original version of this that people wanted. Like, oh, you're making this instead of this, and you're taking away you know what I expected from it. Like, oh, now we're just never going to get another game that's like this thing that I like. Yeah,
at least the way they set it up. But so we'll see whether or not this reacting is a good thing. Ben, to your point, I feel like it should have been obvious that, like, hey, people were so excited that you're coming out with this, stay in the same vein, or at least communicate if you're changing veins, and they just seem behind the eight ball on this. So I don't know how much they can scramble to fix this without kind of completely going back to the drawing board, because the game that I saw in the demo and the core of the you know Valkyria games that exist are very, very different. And so them coming out and saying like, hey, we're going to change the number of people in your party and we're going to change the way this works. Like, it's like someone saying, hey, I'm going to turn Call of Duty into a turn-based game. I don't know if it's going to work that way. So what you could wind up with is a game that was going to be a moderate pile of trash, and in trying to make it better, they're going to turn it into a huge pile of trash.
So like Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah.
Now let's wait 12 years and see.
Yeah.
But I mean, at least they're responding. At least they're not doing like the From Software poise thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like that. I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. It is a good thing that games can be changed.
Yeah,
you know.
And you know, it's important to hear feedback, and that's great. I think if the feedback is so bad that it's causing you to do a genre shift, your problem started way before you started getting feedback.
Yeah, that's weird. If it's in a beta or it's at the demo stage, like a lot of the work has to be done.
Like, yeah, there's entire systems that have been built that are going to become completely irrelevant if you make this thing not an action game anymore.
Yeah.
Although I suppose like probably art assets and like animation and stuff like that could probably be kept.
Yeah.
And like plot. And
from that perspective, it looks like a Valkyria game. Like, it is very much in the same art style as the other ones.
Like that really lush, like painterly, like watercolor anime style.
Yeah, watercolor anime is a great way to describe it. But that's about all that's going to be left if they try to make this transition.
Yeah.
See, all I remember from the previous game is like one level where you're like behind enemy lines, and if you don't take the exact right path through the level, you get like hit by artillery.
Oh yeah, it decides you're a stealth game for a mission, yeah. And that's just the worst experience, as it is in.
So
every
basically,
game
what I'm saying is, they have experience with suddenly changing genre.
Yeah, right. So you know, I'm fond of this series. I hope it will turn out all right in the end. It seems like they've started off on a really, really bad foot.
No. I'm going to do mine real quick here, just because it is kind of short, which is so Disney, by discontinuing the Disney Infinity games, that was their kind of like Skylanders, Amiibo kind of thing. Let's sell you toys that you can put on a dingus to make a game out of them. With that, like Disney itself is no longer making any kind of games. The problem is that Disney still owns itself a lot of IP that it's just not doing anything with.
Mm-hmm.
So the
Star Wars.
Well, like they're shopping. So they're shopping all of that out, like the console stuff, to EA, to Electronic Arts, and they still have like a mobile games division, I think, at least somewhat internal to Disney, that is doing like the Star Wars Heroes or whatever.
I was just making a joke because there's a Star Wars movie coming out every year for like the next decade.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're on that Marvel tip, which is makes sense because it's the same company. What brought this to my attention, because it's all like, oh, Disney Infinity gone down the tubes. That kind of makes sense. It doesn't make, you know, it seems irrelevant, especially compared to something kind of what seems cooler to me, like a universe or whatever. But no, like Ron Gilbert tweeted at Disney, which I guess this is how you start IP kind of negotiations, is over Twitter now, saying, hey, since you're not making games, can I have like Monkey Island and Maniac Mansion back, please? So Ron Gilbert, formerly of LucasArts way back when, one of the kind of chief engineers of the graphical adventure game, wants his babies to come home. And so, yeah, that's the deal. This is also the case for Warren Spector, asking for some IP that he created, kind of under Disney. Warren Spector, he worked on Epic Disney, but he was working on other stuff. So basically, like Disney's console game effort is this sinking Hulk that has all of this delicious, delicious IP jelly inside of it,
including the actual Hulk.
Yes.
So I wonder if there's any chance that, like, good, Disney giving up IP is not going to happen. I mean, we have Mickey Mouse laws for a reason.
Yeah.
That
still makes me angry if I think about it.
Yeah, it really does, me too. But It'd be interesting to see if they might have the presence of mind to be to maybe like recruit some of these people, see if you know, or like farm out the IP or something.
Oh yeah, just like, hey, we won't sell it to you, but if you want to make a game with it, you know, let's talk about it. I don't know, like the whole world of IP just feels let me look up what this word means.
Icky.
Well, there we go. That's a pretty good word for it.
It's one of those.
It feels acrimonious. There we go. I didn't want to use that word incorrectly, and I thought I would derail the podcast when I say it. Like, you look at something like between like Sony and Marvel, and like, okay, you can't call them mutants, but we'll give you Spider-Man. You look at Fox, like, no, we're going to hold on to the Fantastic Four. Stuff like that.
I feel like that's actually for the best.
Fantastic Four is great. They just haven't made a good movie, and all the bad movies have been.
I don't think they could.
I don't know. But like just I don't know, it's all this like weird ugly stuff, and so it could either just be like corporate inertia that keeps these things from going back to not just like where they belong, because like whatever, give me my babies, you know, just whatever, but like to mm-hmm. people who will do anything with them.
Yeah, you know? I feel like some of it, and granted, obviously I'm not an expert on like intellectual property, but it seems like some of the idiocy is just the law, the fact that you legally have to defend intellectual property in order to keep it seems like it causes at least some of the stupidity.
Maybe this seems like a different thing than like a fan project, though. Like, this isn't work that's already underway. This is like this is somebody like asking nicely, like saying, oh, well, this is a chance. Like, you have no interest in making money off of this now. So
sure.
Can I have it back?
So wait, I don't know if this, you know, exists, but if there was a way to kind of like loan out IP and be like, okay, we'll let you infringe and do your thing.
See,
we're going to hang
see,
on
and
to
that's
it,
the thing. Like you can't let people infringe. And I'm not, I don't know, could you simply enter into a contract effectively for free?
There are revenue splits and things like that. Like Kindle Worlds is one of those things where certain like television shows and, you know, like book series kind of thing say, all right, there are people who are writing fan fiction. There are huge audiences for them. We don't want them making money off of this without us, you know, kind of getting our beak wet. So right. We're going to go to Amazon and say, hey, people can sell their, you know, 1,000-page fan fiction opuses about Supernatural or whatever, or the, you know, Vampire Diaries, I think is the more accurate example. But we're going to take like a 50-50 cut after Amazon gets their 30, you know, like that is like that is a way. But like that isn't, I don't know, like that seems like there's not very much dignity in that, especially for the person who created the IP.
Yeah.
Yeah, by the way, no, it is definitely Supernaturals is fan fiction is alive and well.
Yeah, Supernaturals fan fiction is
so bad. Look up Wincest sometime if you just want to be kind of whatever.
I really don't want to. Like, I don't like thinking about that because my little sister is crazy into Supernatural. And like,
so Supernaturals fan fiction is so bad that they reference it in Supernatural.
That's pretty funny. Like,
yeah, they like do a bit about it. there's an entire character who is a quote unquote prophet, that his the way his prophecies manifest is that he writes a fiction series about the two main characters. And so he's like, you know, he writes the books before whatever happens.
Dennis, how do you know this?
Oh man, I've watched like 6 seasons of Supernatural.
Okay.
Oh yeah, it's a great
don't worry,
show.
There's like 16.
I'm not gonna since you were 16, you said?
I said there's like 16 seasons. Oh, okay. So I think they've gone on way, way farther off the rails than they were. They were pretty far off the rails when I was still watching.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is my problem with it. It's like that's, I don't know.
Huh. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, no, I guess my only frame of reference for Supernatural is my little sister and just a bunch of other stuff like that.
How old is she?
She's 17.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
Yeah.
It's a scary ass show for a younger kid, but 17 is about right.
Yeah,
so that's perfect Supernatural age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. I have one more thing. This isn't like a paid endorsement or anything. Like, we, you know, everybody knows we're friends with them. But if you go on to Steam Greenlight, go to Steam and then the community tab, and then on Greenlight, and do a search for West of Loathing. Our friends who do Kingdom of Loathing, their turn-based RPG, like a Western sequel to KOL, is on Greenlight, and they're doing really well. But I want them to do better. So go there and vote for them so this thing exists.
That's awesome.
It exists. It's already like winning awards and shit, like at shows. But you know, I want it to be on Steam. I want as many people to get it as possible. So, and Ben, you have two stories about Uncharted, don't you?
Yeah, it's basically just two small stories. It seemed like a dry couple of weeks in the news cycle, but yeah, it was just basically two stories about the development of Uncharted 4. The only one that I want to mention is that they kind of went to semi-significant lengths to make sure that it was an inclusive experience for anybody who might have motor skill difficulties or color blindness.
Yeah.
And so the one example that they talked about was a fan was playing Uncharted 2, and there was a portion at the end of the game that they couldn't get past because it required you to do a button jamming cutscene.
Yeah.
And he did not have like the ability to press the controller that much. So they started adding features in the latest Uncharted where you could do things like just hold a button for a quick time event. Mm-hmm. One of the other examples they gave is there's lock on aiming if you have a harder time doing stuff with the two joysticks at once. So
yeah.
Yeah. So that just seemed like a cool idea that they put that in there. And I think one last example is on their multiplayer, they changed the team colors so that they're distinguishable. So it's red and blue instead of red and green.
Oh, great.
For anybody who's red, green, colorblind.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I feel like, what did it used to be red and green?
Apparently so.
I feel like that one should have been obvious.
Like, yeah, red versus blue is a thing because it's red versus blue.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I would turn on that just hold the button thing in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I feel like the real answer was maybe you shouldn't have quick time effects. Stop it.
Oh, man. I'm just remembering Perfect Dark Zero, which thought it was doing you a favor. So they were... the colors are red and green, which mark against you anyway. They said like, oh, well, what we're going to do to like reduce confusion is your team is always green and the other team is always red. So from
which
your perspective,
I like games that do that approach with like your team is always like, you know, always looks one way and the bad guys always look the other way.
But even still, like, that's like, okay, well, that doesn't help 10% of the male population.
right. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I thought was remarkable about this, I saw this, but I figured somebody was going to bring it because Uncharted is white hot right now, is that when I fired Uncharted 4 up, I was amazed to see the accessibility options like front and center.
Oh, really?
Like when you start a new game, it's like, okay, well, here's audio, here's video, and then like, oh, like down beneath that, like beneath like, oh, do you want to invert the Y axis or whatever is this
are you a monster? Yeah.
Hey, you know, different strokes. It's a third person game. Like that's a thing for people. Was like accessibility, and like to see this not be buried in like mm-hmm. five levels of UI is great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At the risk of moralizing here, as many people should do as many things for accessibility as possible, because if you don't need it now, you may one day need it.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. That's not moralizing. That's like practicalizing.
Yeah. Just like, it's good. Like, I understand there's extra cost. Yeah, pragmatizing. There we go. But no, it's just one of those things like, oh, like, yes, there is a development cost. Yes, there are considerations. Yes, you have to think about it and innovate and all that kind of thing. But like, it feels worth it to me as somebody who is not like in the industry or whatever. Like, it's always cool to see when people do that.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer section where we ask you a question. And plenty of you are kind enough to answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
The question is about walkthroughs and hint systems. Specifically, how do you decide when to start using one, and kind of how do you feel about them in general?
Yeah, this is a hot topic. We got a lot of very lengthy answers, so if we don't get through too many of them, I'm sorry. It's all your fault. I'm going to pick up with Roop, who says, with point-and-click games, I avoid using either one. The hint systems in those games are usually too straightforward or more confusing. I usually give a week for myself to find the solution, and after that, I try to find the most spoiler-free walkthrough. With older games that have time limits, etc., I tend to play with the walkthrough easily available for when I get stuck. Yeah. I hate it. I just, oh gosh, if you try and play like an old like text adventure or like a really old graphical adventure with a walkthrough, most of those walkthroughs are literally just lists of instructions.
Which they almost have to be with how convoluted some of the stuff is, though.
I suppose, yeah, but it's I kind of want to figure out how to disconfuckle the combobulator.
And so I'd love to see that for like Colossal Cave Adventures. Up, down, well, south.
I'm positive it exists. Like, but it's like, you know, just like if you're looking for, okay, how do I solve this particular problem? Well, I'm sure that like how you do that is answered here within these. I don't want to swoop anybody. But
you don't want to spoiler anything.
David, what does Steven say?
Steve says, anymore, I'll only use a walkthrough if I want to find all of the shiny bits, like I'm doing in Uncharted right now. But I used to use them with Reckless Abandon as a kid, which in my mind robbed me of some of the experience. I know the dog jumps through the window in Resident Evil, not because I was surprised by it with terror, but because I read that it would happen before opening that door.
Yeah. I wish I could highlight that sad smiley face there and then just like blow it up to 10x.
Although I am really happy that in Eternal Darkness, someone warned me to, like, you know, gird ye loins before walking to the bathtub.
I love that bathtub scene. Ben, what does Amanda say?
Amanda says, hint systems within a game that wait a certain amount of time while you are working on a puzzle tend to be a cool design choice. As for walkthroughs, I have been known to use them when I get stuck because I have a limited amount of time to play video games, and I don't want to spend my limited game time getting frustrated. Probably doesn't play Dark Souls. That being said, I try to hold off as much as possible and only use them when necessary. The website Before I Play is great as well. However, old-school Prima walkthroughs are why I knew things like what happens in Eris before I got to that point in Final Fantasy VII, because I read ahead.
What happens in Eris is a sword.
Spoilers!
20-year-old.
Too soon.
I have to say Ben, I almost tried to figure out how to download the spoiler add-on to the wiki just so I could spoiler tag your entire profile.
I like.
Yes, he approves. Yeah, Before I Play is great. Like check stuff out. Like sometimes when I'm even just like try like thinking about a game I used to play, I'll just go and like read that article and be like, oh yeah, that is a thing about that. But you know, I do weird things in bed when I can't sleep.
Especially with games that have like character creation choices and statting early on, do you think it tends to shoehorn players? Like how much is it? You know, they only talk about, hey, make sure you pick XYZ stat. When it will absolutely screw you if you don't, versus like min-maxing and optimizing your character. Because there's a lot of fun that can be had playing with like a non-optimal character that's just, you know, you chose because you didn't know any better, but it gives you abilities or gives you an experience that's slightly different.
It obviously changes depending on the game. I think that like when it is giving you advice about a stat, like you can kind of read because this is a lot of it's actually compiled from a Something Awful thread that's like, hey, what should I know before I play X? And you can kind of read their voice into it. And it's like, oh shit, man, Constitution's a dump stat. And it's like, well, no, I'll look at this stuff and figure. I think that more information about that kind of like basic systems level stuff helps you make more informed decisions about the non-optimal things you might end up doing.
Yeah, I feel like it depends on the game, you know, how important some of that stuff is too.
Yeah. Like, you know, if I'm going to play Planescape Torment, I want to know that wisdom is the key stat. Because if I walk into this saying, hey, this is like Baldur's Gate, but in Planescape, and I stat for strength, like I'm not gonna experience that game in the right way.
I have been pretty sorry, this is kind of going off the rails, but I've been pretty impressed by the fact that, like, almost any thread I've seen for Dark Souls has been what build should I do. People recommend, like, quality builds so that, you know, your first playthrough, you can just do whatever you want.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a lot more mature than I would expect from, like, most responses to, you know, like, most game responses to that sort of question end up as, like, you know.
You're an idiot if you do anything, but why?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, it just the advice that I would give anybody starting Dark Souls is, like, see a weapon that you want, like, stat for that. Go nuts, right, kid. Like, and if anything else fails, you never lose by putting stats into HP or endurance. Like, okay.
Any weapon you want, as long as that weapon is not a ladle.
In that case, are you Lobos or not?
Wait, are we making a reference to Salt and Sanctuary or?
No, Dark Souls seasoning, yeah. No, Dark Souls 2, one of the joke weapons is a ladle that one of the elderly firekeepers at the beginning gives you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, like, I think a ladle is a fairly legit weapon in Salt and Sanctuary.
That has to be an in-joke on their part.
Yeah, I think probably.
Yeah. Oh, man. Let's see. Dennis, how about you? What do we got next?
Ollie says, hint systems in-game I find annoying as they really out-immersion and are usually pretty silly. But I must admit, I've used walkthroughs to try and complete quests in certain games. Sigmire, anyone? They can be super helpful when you get stuck. I have a friend who only uses walkthroughs, so for Fallout 3, he'll follow a set quest line. He says he does it to maximize his play while minimizing his time spent. He's got 6 kids, so limited time. No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, when I've used walkthroughs, it's been for completion, and that makes me go so super slow through a game. So if I could see, like, him choosing, okay, just what choices should I make, what direction should I head without needing to hit every single thing, I guess that could speed you up.
See, I wish for, like, Fallout, I wish I could just get a guide of, like, which of these items, you know, seemingly useless junk, is going to be needed for some quest down the line.
Glue. Adhesive.
Yeah. Lots and lots of adhesive. Or if you're playing New Vegas, lots and lots of vault suits.
Yeah. As you should. Those vault suits are great. Especially the ones that give you plus speech. Let's see here. Michael writes, I don't mind hints and facts usually. I think that support community and seeking answers is part of the fun. Like the soapstone messages from Dark Souls. I lean heavily on them for puzzles because I'm not a big fan of riddles in my games. The one exception that really rankles me is when a game tones things down based on my failures without asking. That infuriates me.
Now, technically, isn't that Dark Souls 2?
No.
Like, if you go through an area enough times without completing it, you can kill an enemy only a finite number of times, and then it stops spawning, right?
That is.
Oh, see, I thought that was the other way around. I thought that was meant to make the game more difficult.
Yeah, so that's only Dark Souls 2. That could be argued as making it easier for you. However, that is similarly an anti-grinding consideration as well. So there are people who view it as both a blessing and also a curse.
Fair enough.
Sorry to use that cliche. That's kind of shitty. But yeah, like, that is it could go either way there. Yeah. The trick for that, honestly, like the whole, it's enabling suck mode, right, is to do it invisibly, right? Like, I think that, Resident Evil 4 does a really good job with that, which is like, oh, you're running low on ammo. Here, have some more ammo.
Yeah. I feel like, because I, on the other hand, I can see what Mike was saying, where, like, if it does it invisibly and you don't want it, that could be annoying. Hmm. Although it seems like maybe kind of to you, what you said, it's maybe a little bit less. I don't know. It seems like it's more tolerable if it's the game just, like, facilitating things, like with the ammo or, like, the way Left 4 Dead does it, as opposed to the game actually making things easier.
Yeah.
It should also be on a game-by-game basis, too, right? If it's an adventure game, the point of it might not be, you know, like, beating a difficult boss, you know?
Yeah. Or like to flip that around, if it's the witness, like what if, you know, when you came back to a puzzle, there was like a marking on it that gave you a hint or something like that.
So they do have hints in that game, but it's how to move and what the controls are at the very beginning.
That's funny. David, what does Brandon say?
Sure. Brandon says, for me, it depends on the game. Dark Souls, I generally have a wiki open for consultation when I'm curious about something, definitely. Games with platforming or environmental puzzles like Uncharted, I usually just look up the solution if it isn't immediately apparent.
Hmm. Yeah. Uncharted is a weird one, actually. Like, I can't imagine what a walkthrough for Uncharted would look like.
So
shoot all the dudes. Shoot them well.
I think so. Like all Naughty Dog games will throw up like flashes if there's like a puzzle or something that you're working on and you've been stuck on it too long. It'll pop up something and it'll say like, "Go over here" or "Do this."
Yeah,
as like a hint system. Yeah,
I ran into that today in Uncharted 4. Was like, oh, like I was obviously going kind of like the wrong way, or I was stuck trying to climb something I couldn't climb, and they're like, "Hey, press this button to get a little like waypoint showing you where to go next." And yeah, that was pretty cool.
I hate it when they remind me more than once.
Yeah.
Or like if they have an NPC being like, you know, the whole like, "What are you doing? We've got to hurry." It's like, "No, I'm looking for collectibles. Fuck you."
I don't care if this is a prison break. Yeah. also like when you're doing the kind of rare puzzles in Uncharted, actually, like Nathan Drake will talk to himself like, so and so, and that feels like in character. That feels like such an exception, and it like it's a hint system, but it's like diegetic.
I know the thing, whenever I end up looking up one of these ones in like a physics puzzle or environmental puzzle, seems like half the time it's something I thought I tried already, but I didn't have, like, you know, I threw the soccer ball just slightly wrong so that it didn't make the, you know, doohickey physics right.
Yeah.
Wait, you looked up a cheat guide to Rocket League?
Yes.
I had to do that with Sherlock Holmes The Awakened. That was the first of those kind of games that used, I think it was like the Source Engine, but they used like physics with it. In order to do that, and just kind of like, physics based puzzles don't work when the physics glitch, which is what happened. Right. Yeah.
Is that the one with like the creepy Watson?
I think yes. It definitely had creepy Watson. I don't know if it was the first one with creepy Watson.
Okay.
Yeah. That was one with the Dixieland chase. Yeah. I like that game. That's that was a lot of fun. That's the Lovecraft.
Sherlock okay, Holmes yeah. Game. Yeah, I think there's one previous one that had like creepy Watson, but
yeah,
that's actually all I know about the game is I've seen the videos of like that.
Yep. Oh man. I'm trying to imagine like this has to be a thing where like if you fail against a boss enough in a game, like then, you know, like the 10th time you get to them without beating it, they're like, "Fuck this. I just can't stand it anymore. You just keep on losing." And then he jumps into like lava or something. Yeah, like that'd be salt in the wounds.
I'm just hoping that, you know, in Dark Souls, you know, if apparently I keep, you know, phasing into these alternate worlds or whatever, sooner or later I have to reach one where they've already killed the boss.
Just summon somebody else in. That's how that happens. You're just there while they're killing him.
Hey, I did that when I was doing my no weapons only items run. I would bring someone in, we'd go to the boss fog, and then I just kind of like roll around while they fought the boss.
Yeah, it's like technical virginity. Yeah.
What's funny is like I'd throw a dagger here and there when I did have items, and almost all the people that I played with caught on immediately to what I was trying to do. Like they totally got it. So it's just wonderful that like I feel like in the Souls games, and I'm sure you guys have covered this a thousand times over more than anywhere else, like you find someone doing something weird and you're just like, yeah, let's totally. Yep.
Yeah. That's why I always go for the Mad Phantoms in Dark Souls 3. I want to see what people's shit, like what their gimmick is.
Yep.
the number of like Shrek recreations are pretty good.
Shrek recreations are to Dark Souls 3 as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles creations are to Dark Souls 2. Yeah, the Shrek is strong. Ben, what does Sam say?
Sam says, when they're automatic and appear whether you like it or not, it's incredibly annoying. I love Metroid Prime and Shadow of the Colossus, but those games needed to trust the player more. Generally, I go for hints as soon as I run out of constructive things to do in a game. For example, even though I would get stuck on puzzles for days at a time, I didn't need any guides for the witness until the more linear final area, because the game provided with enough options at any given time that I never felt like I was wasting my time.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shut up, Dorman. That's how I feel sometimes when I'm playing Shadow of the Colossus. Shut up. I know I'm doing bad. Game.
Wait, who's Dorman?
That's the spooky voice that talks to you and tells you to commit, you know, rock genocide.
Fair enough.
Dude, rock genocide.
That would be an awesome name for an album.
Terrible. Sounds like a
successor to the Vans Warp Tour.
Ooh. I don't know. Something about that seems so unseemly. It sounds like the band that played in that crazy party in American History X. let's see here. Dennis, what does Jeff say?
Jeff says, the coolest thing about walkthroughs and hints is the way that YouTube and wikis have changed everything. We don't have to rely on sometimes wrong Prima and Brady Games guides anymore. We can basically watch the entire game we are playing be played by someone potentially better than we are. But more importantly, that's made games way more accessible than before. Don't have the time to play a game yourself? Watch someone do it. Speed up options on videos are beneficial as well. Don't understand a specific part of the gameplay? Check the wiki or Reddit. The internet changed games, and mostly for the better.
So I feel like the downside of this is most of the time I would rather watch a let's play of a game than actually play it. Mm. But I actually have to have things to talk about for the podcast.
But it's true. Like, you would never just buy, I won't say you would never, because I'm sure someone has done it, but the Prima guide for a game you don't own and just leaf through it.
Oh, I've got tons of Prima guides for games that I don't own. Granted, yeah, I got them because we were going to throw them away at GameStop, but.
Yeah.
I kind of want to go back and look, because I remember, like, the at least like way back in the day, they would often have some like cool extra features, which I guess back then that was like before you could download fan art, or not fan art, but like concept art and stuff. But
I have to. So I see where Jeff is coming from. I get frustrated that, like, with newer games that don't have, like, something on GameFAQs. For as much as we lampoon GameFAQs on Abject Suffering, like, being able to control F or do, like a web search for the area or so and not and just find the answer to what I'm looking for, as opposed to, okay, here's a 15-minute video and having to kind of, like, search around in that to hear somebody meanderingly get to their point, much like I'm doing right now. Just kind of like, I want everything to be bullet pointed lists, you know?
See, I usually just vaguely describe my problem and punch it into Google, and that usually works.
Yeah. Alexa, how do I kill the dragon?
Sorry, I don't know the answer.
Well, neither do I Alexa. Wait. Come on. She said she doesn't know the answer.
That's great.
So angry.
2 more days in solitary confinement, Alexa.
It's a locker inside a soundproof box. Oh,
I don't know. Like, just searching for Dark Souls, how do I kill the dragon, actually takes you directly to information on how to beat the Hellkite dragon. So, just saying.
let's go one more time around. We're pushing on time. I don't want to, you know, we've been away. So let's pick up here. That was Jeff. Let's do Chase. Hey Chase, thanks for helping with the wiki. Thanks for spearheading the wiki, actually. Who writes, it always varies from game to game. If it is something I'm not terribly invested in, I will look at Google the first time I hit a wall. For others, like Dark Souls, I'm more willing to throw myself into the meat grinder for a few days before giving in. That said, after having a major area name spoiled for me, yes, that area, by an impulsively purchased guide, I may have to rethink my strategy.
I like that he doesn't even say the name of the game, but I know it's Dark Souls.
Oh yeah, it's definitely Dark Souls, because that's all anybody ever writes about. and also know exactly what area he's talking about. Yeah, that's I don't know. It definitely has to vary by game. Like, you can't just have, like, a dogmatic opinion. That's where I get, like, it rankles me when somebody makes, like, a definitive statement, like, one way or the other. Mm. Yeah.
Are you saying that there's no way you can make a statement like that, Cole?
I mean, I just made a definitive statement about definitive statements, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, what does David say?
David says, I'm fine. Overall, I'm fine with it. If someone needs help getting through a tough patch in a game, I'd rather them be able to get help than put the game down. I think the Professor Layton games do it really well. Hints cost coins, which are hidden out in the world, which encourages exploration. But a finite, so you really try to wrap your head around a puzzle before resorting to use them.
Yeah, I didn't even read ahead in David's response, but I was like, oh man, Professor Layton does this so well. Yeah.
Nice.
It's pretty good. Yeah. Just make a, like, just tying it to a system. Like, you know, if you are engaging with a Professor Layton game, you're not going to run out of coins, but the threat of eventually running out of coins, it feels a little bit like a Resident Evil thing, not to bring that up two times in a row. They could just be like stringing you along. So you always have like 10 coins and you don't want to get down to like single digits or whatever. Like, you know, you could effectively have unlimited hints, but the fact that there's a number tied to it and you don't want numbers to go down, you just want numbers to go up is just, it's enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ben, the numbers must go up.
Yeah. That's every game.
How do I make numbers go up, Alexa? Tell me.
Ben, what does Nathan say?
Nathan says, I game mostly on momentum, and if I get stuck, I'll look at a walkthrough. Otherwise, I might just stop playing the game altogether. And if a game has a cool side areas, items, or characters that are missable, I'll use the guide. It used to be that I felt guilty about looking something up, but time is valuable. As long as I'm having fun, it doesn't matter how I get to the end result.
Yeah.
Real ends justify the means kind of guy.
That I was, again, yeah, Ben, you've got me really like sensitive about definitive statements. That feels like the only real answer to me, but yeah. I don't know, maybe that might be just a little bit too definitive. Mm-hmm. It's a good answer. I think it's a good answer if we're rating our answers.
All right. 4.5 out of 5.
Well, no,
there's one good answer, everyone else sucks.
What people need to understand is we rate these questions like Olympic judges. Like, all of us hold up our number cards, you know.
It doesn't help much because we're all on Skype, so we can't see the numbers, but
Dennis, round us out with Eric.
Eric says, in game, not so much, but nothing quite like a wiki dive. The unofficial Elder Scrolls pages was my jam at my older call center job between calls. Yeah, I think that's great. That, like, the maybe not walkthroughs so much, but just the wikis and resources like that, just for interesting facts, can make a game extend way beyond you just playing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that would probably kind of be my answer, although I have to say I wish some wikis would be a little more intelligent with avoiding spoilers. Like, at least give a be self-aware of that. Fallout 4, I was looking up, you know, just some, like, you know, some trivial, you know, background information or something. It's going through and it's like, you know, such and such, you know, character profile, race, synth. It's like, well, fuck.
And then you just spoiled it for all of our listeners. This game has been out for 6 months.
What? That yes, there is at least one character in that game who is a synth.
There's nothing saying that's what the whole game's about. We can't confirm or deny, you know?
I played that game, and I honestly don't know who you're referring to with that. So.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, the one that actually kind of annoyed me on this, or on like guides in general, is La Mulana.
Oh yeah, that's a game I could see being very resistant to guides.
Well, actually, the thing is, like, it's very much like, you know, you know, everything you see about it, you know, it's very much accepted that at some point you will need to use a guide, to the point where, like,
not our friend Riff.
Well, fair enough. But like, you know how they, you know, in Dark Souls, people will do, like, you know, the various challenge runs, like completing the game without consulting the wiki is considered a challenge run.
Yeah.
But the problem is, there's, like, you know, how do you determine, like, when is it difficult enough? You know, when is this time that, you know, this completely, you know, obtuse, you know, puzzle is the one I need help with, you know? That's just me.
Yeah. I know. It sounds like what you're looking for is, like, I want to make sure that this gets brought up. And if I wasn't going to bring it up, I was going to look for somebody else who did. Jonathan Kufus talks about the universal hint system, which it's pretty spotty. Like, you know, just they're not an awful lot for kind of like a lot of really recent games. But UHS is a wonderful kind of alternative to wikis and walkthroughs, just because each game kind of has like a series of vague questions, like, oh, how UHS, how do I defeat the dragon? And then you click on the button, it's like, oh, how do I defeat the dragon? And it says, well, have you found the wizard's key? It's like, oh, well, where's the wizard's key? Well, have you been to so and so? And it's spoiler free, and everything is just kind of like you are going down these little like canals, and it has different locks that you have to do. It's like, okay, well, it'll be vague until it's like just as specific as you need, and then you can like dip out.
Yeah, so, I tried that for Dark Souls, but every one I clicked just went to get good.
Yeah, that's annoying. What was there you said, Ben?
So it's a walkthrough that only uses the Socratic method.
Yes, it's a command line, is what it is. Yeah, so I wanted to make sure that got out there. I was going to mention it in mine, but I wanted Jonathan to get credit for bringing up this wonderful thing. We should probably do ours because I want to make sure we move along a little bit. But yeah, so for me, whatever gets you as far as you want to get in a game is kind of the answer that I would give. Like, for me, you know, the momentary indignity of consulting a guide or a wiki or whatever is far smaller than the just dissatisfaction of saying, well, this is where this game ends for me, because there may be something easier, it may be a bullshit difficulty wall, it may be something that was very poorly signposted. Like, I want to experience as much as I can, you know. And so I've never really had compunction around that. And I've never had sympathy for the point of view that is like using that as a weapon. Like, well, you never really experienced the game if you did. So I'm like, fuck you. There's nothing telling you can't tell me whether or not what I did is real. Come on.
I'm not a synth.
I love how this has become like a podcast about epistemology.
Yeah, kind of like, what's real, you know. That said, man, it is so hard. Like, once you pop, the fun don't stop. Like, the seal is broken. Like,
once you pop, the fact don't stop.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's a I don't know.
Heroin, like, spelled WIN at the end.
Yep.
Yep.
Stop pitching titles. No, it's fine, pitch all the titles you want. But like, you know, if you're like a third of the way through, I have to stop myself from thinking, well, I looked at it once, I might as well just have this open in front of me the whole time.
See, that's why I like Dark Souls, because like all the quote-unquote spoilers are just like them name dropping things that I have no idea what they're talking about anyways.
Yeah, it's hardly a spoiler if you don't have context for it,
right?
I mean, at least in my opinion. But yeah, it's a like, you know, do it, don't be afraid to go for it, but man, oh man, self-control is hard. Yeah. David, how about you?
I don't have a lot of tolerance for like obtuse.
I need a word
that begins with O.
I need more context before I can answer.
Arcane puzzles.
Oh yeah.
But I don't know. I think my favorite ever actually is I asked for help once with a quest just on general chat in World of Warcraft, and someone like gave me the advice for the beating the quest in the form of a riddle, which was pretty badass.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I like that. That's much better than saying, oh, fuck you, fucking noob. Any of that. I guess I'm just anti-hostility, and that's not a stance. That's just
we are hostile to hostility.
why wouldn't you tolerate my hostility? Ben, how about you?
Yeah, so I was trying to think of a couple examples. The Witness came to mind as well. Like, so I would say that there's two types of puzzles in that game, one of which I think you're probably not supposed to use a walkthrough. I would argue that there's enough information given there that you could deduce all the puzzles. And then the other one, I'm pretty okay with, and I did, in fact, use a walkthrough on those because I don't know how you would figure it outside of wandering aimlessly around that game for hours on end.
Those are the environmental, like, stand here for a while puzzles.
Possibly. Who knows? Who knows what's in that game? But, yeah. So that's kind of where the line is for me, at least. I do think Uncharted is a good example of how to do hints or puzzles, though, and I think that's a good context in which to do it, where I don't think many people are looking to have really in-depth or detailed puzzles in that type of game. So,
yeah. How would you do it if Nathan Drake wasn't the kind of character who would talk to himself, though?
Well, I mean, they'll still have hints outside of that as well.
I suppose.
Like you, if you press like the down button or whatever, they'll say something. I think it'll have like one type of hint where it'll be like kind of oblique, and then it'll press it again. It'll say, just do this.
Yeah, you know what? That's not what this game is about. And nothing is really what this game is about, aside from seeing more of it. Okay, cool. Let's go.
Yeah.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'll use walkthroughs, like you said, when I feel like, okay, well, I'm not going to get any further without this, when I've kind of exhausted my patience for the game. But I have to be careful because I've got a lot of inner completionist. And if I start using the walkthrough and then start seeing, oh, I miss this thing or I need to get this thing, or then I go down the rabbit hole really quick of just needing to 100% the game because I've got the information to do so.
Like you've already walked the trail. You know where the spring is.
Yeah. So that's the temptation for me. But yeah, I like the stuff that was brought up, like you said, universal hint system before I play, that is more oblique, doesn't give stuff away. Mm-hmm. But I'll sometimes just go for the obvious. What's the best way to do X?
I really recommend so go to before I play and just like look at an article for a game you've played and like see if it's your speed. Like obviously this is a whole bunch of different authors writing these things, but like it's a great resource, and I think that would head off. Like I've printed out before I play, especially for WoF games, I've printed out before I play articles and like cross stuff off as I've gotten to it.
I feel like, especially for the ones that really get on my nerves, that like where I want to walk through, or some of the like in Dark Souls has some of this where it's like, oh, you know, you better buy everything from this vendor because the game's going to kill them off with absolutely no foreshadowing after you do this.
Yeah. That's how life is, you know. Your favorite convenience store operator just sometimes has a heart attack and dies.
Yeah.
So sometimes...
Except I didn't spend, you know, $60 to, you know, buy life.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm saying you know a lot. Sometimes a sword happens in a person. There are so many answers that we didn't get to in this. And if you want to check them out, I've read ahead. They're all really good. Go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And also, if you want to participate in future examples of these things, those go up on that Facebook page. Thanks to Dennis, Tuesday afternoons or so. And we really appreciate both him for doing that and you for answering them. Let's see here. Oh, I didn't need to say that. That's usually where we cut off. Why am I still talking?
That's where we'll cut off.
Yeah, I suppose.
Alexa,
I
how do I bail out of this conversation?
I still haven't cut. Oh no.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past 2 weeks or so. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
I can go.
All right, Dennis, go.
Yeah, I've got one new game and then one old game that has gotten new life. That game is Hohokam.
Brr?
And Hohokam?
You hated that game.
How do you spell it?
Yeah. H-O-H-O-K-U-M. I did hate that game. Like, I played it on Vita when I went on vacation probably a year ago or so. And it just there wasn't enough going on in the game. Like, it was pretty, but it was directionless, which turns out is perfect if you want your two-year-old to like video games.
So just patterns and colors and soothing music?
Yeah. So I've been introducing or trying to introduce Luke to games, and was like, oh my God, this might be great. Like, there's no pressure. There's no real objectives. You just kind of wiggle around as the snake thing, and sometimes things happen.
Okay.
And that is right on the speed of a two-year-old. So he quite enjoyed controlling that.
This is the strongest damnation by the faintest praise.
Yeah. Backhanded compliments.
Yeah.
Describe this setup to me, please. Like, are you holding him kind of on the crook of your arm as he got the Vita kind of up there and he's
oh no, so I downloaded
you actually PS2, dangle so him got... by his feet over top of the Vita.
you have no choice.
I put it on the PS3. So he's playing it up on the big screen.
Okay.
And he kind of instinctively knows how to hold the controller, which is cool.
Well, he's seen you do it so much.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's probably true. The thing I can't figure out is he naturally uses the right stick to move.
Is he a righty?
I don't know. Like, everyone uses the left stick whether or not they're a righty or a lefty.
I mean, like, if you're
he's actually though shown tendencies of being a lefty. Hmm. Like, he throws left-handed right now, but he's so young that doesn't mean anything. Hmm. But anyway, yeah. So he is constantly moving the right stick. And won't really touch the left stick, which is what actually moves the character.
Yeah.
So I think if he ever makes that connection, the game will become that much more exciting for him.
As opposed to just the snake sitting still while shapes happen.
Yeah.
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 I mean, like, he might just start using his right hand on the left stick.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be fine. But then, I mean, I don't want to put in weak habits for when he's a super pro gamer. I don't want to hold him back at all.
So. No. You gotta correct that early. Tie his right hand behind his back.
That's right.
Wait, what?
Oh. But I will have maybe some less faint praise is going back to that game. The music is fantastic.
Hmm.
Like, just the soundtrack is really, really enjoyable to listen to in that ambient music kind of way. And the dynamic stuff that happens in the music as you move around the world is just weaved really seamlessly in. To where you kind of know it's happening because you're interacting with these things, but it never feels obvious. Like, it always feels like it was completely meant to be there and it was a natural part of the soundtrack, even though you're influencing what shows up and what doesn't. So
is there a portion of this that is like you're seeing it through his eyes because you're playing it together?
That's definitely possible. I think that has greatly increased my patience for the game. the music, I think, having kind of tried it again, I probably like on its own terms. And if, you know, I think I would have come around on that again if I'd been exposed to it without him. I think I just maybe since I was playing it on the Vita, maybe I didn't have the sound on or wasn't paying as much attention to sound, yada, yada. But I'm definitely kind of more willing to just ambiently enjoy the game or just sit there and let nothing of import happen while the character moves around the screen, which, just, you know, having read a little bit about the game, it feels like that might have been what they had in mind from the start.
Hmm.
Of just like, hey, we want this to be more about being in a space than playing a game.
Hmm.
So basically, this game needs more marijuana.
Yeah.
So have you been smoking with your kid, Dennis, or?
Yeah, I haven't tried that angle yet.
Yeah, it's maybe a baby vape. baby vape. It's like a little pacifier.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's not going to be doing any kind of tricks. You tie his right hand behind his back, and then you just like you just encourage him to blow the biggest clouds of cotton possible.
Yeah, he's already hungry all the time, so he's halfway there.
He's a growing boy. He's a growing high boy.
Oh my God, is he? Anyway.
So growing, so high.
So growing much high. The new game is a Vita game, and I think it's on PS4 as well, but an indie game called Nova 111. And it is a grid-based puzzler that also has real-time elements. And it mixes the like grid slash turn-based and real-time pieces together in a very, very interesting way. So you are a spaceship or a flying submarine or some kind of vehicle that has scientists on it. I'm not entirely sure.
Looks like an orange toaster with an antenna.
Yeah, the yellow submarine. Why don't we go with that? It's an odd looking vehicle that's been kind of some kind of timey-wimey sciencey explosion happened and threw people everywhere, and you're kind of picking up the pieces afterwards.
That's rather dark.
it's gruesome. But you know, kind of trying to regather, I guess, everything that's been exploded all over the place. It's a very colorful, lighthearted world. So I don't want to make it seem darker than it is. But anyway, you move around levels on a grid. So everything is, you know, squares. And most enemies only move after you move. So you move one square and then all the other things on the screen move one square. And
it's
then
like
you
move one square. Rogue or NetHack. Yeah,
exactly. Except there are many different pieces that happen once you trigger them in real time. So there are stalactites that are on the ceiling that if you move under them, they will kind of jostle and fall in real time, and you have to get out of the way, regardless of whether or not you advance a turn. There are enemies that when they come into view, they'll latch onto your ship and start sucking life from you. And they'll just continue doing so in real time until you reach them and kill them on the grid. Which creates these really interesting scenarios where you're trying to manage these enemies, because there's definitely like an optimal way to take enemies out in terms of like, okay, I position myself this way so that they move on this square and then I attack and then I move to this square, which means they'll move to this square and I attack and I kill them. So that, you know, it's very systematic with many enemies. But then you've got this element of needing to, okay, now I need to get to this other enemy really quickly, or I need to get out of the way of this falling stalactite, which throws an element of chaos on
It's stalactite.
Stalactite?
Stalactite, because they're on the ceiling.
You've got to be messing with me.
Stalagmite is from the bottom. Stalactite is the top.
Stalactite.
I thought it was stalactite and stalagmite.
Stalactite.
With X is stalactite.
Oh, it's stalactite, not stalactite.
Okay. You got to be messing with me right now.
That's a C because it's on the ceiling.
Is that for real?
Yeah.
Have I been saying it wrong my entire life?
No, I said it wrong too. We were all saying it wrong.
It's a stalactite, right?
No. So the ones on the ground are stalagmites.
Yeah.
And there's a G because it's on the ground, and it's a stalactite because it's from growing from the ceiling. There's a C. I just forgot the T when I corrected you. Douchily, I might add.
So how do you say the one on the ceiling?
Stalactite.
Stalactite.
Good boy.
There's a spiky thing falling.
Yeah. There's a ceiling rock.
Yeah. So that's kind of the shtick or the gimmick of this game, and it works really well for the most part.
Does that get confusing, like changing the turn-based roguelike stuff for like stuff that just happens regardless?
Yeah, and I think the entire reason there is real-time stuff is to inject chaos into something that would be otherwise a little bit too easy if you had all the time in the world to think through turns. So I think it's intentional to have that kind of bit of craziness there. And it works really well. My one, I don't even know if it's a complaint, but it's the one thing I think they could do better is they could make the levels a little bit shorter and more focused. So the way you're scored is it counts the number of turns that you take. So the number of movements that you make. And, you know, overall, the levels are just so long that you don't, you know, I wound up just kind of zoning out and not trying to do things efficient just because it took me so long to get through levels that it was hard to feel like any right or wrong step was making an impact. And the levels tend to be kind of naturally broken up into individual puzzles anyway. They're just like connected by a corridor instead of connected by an end of level. And so I would love to have seen them break those individual puzzles up into pieces a little bit more, so you could feel like solving them was, you know, in a more or less efficient way, was having more of an impact. The other thing I appreciate about the game is your abilities are powered by science. Articulate to the point where when you level up, you get plus one science.
Okay.
To help run more abilities.
So wait, you mean
that's not how it worked when you were in college? Like, you didn't, you know, complete your final exam and get plus one business?
I got 4.0 electronic medias. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. So yeah, a fun little game.
It's like Civ. Like, that happens in Civ. You get like science, culture, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's on PlayStation Plus, I think, this month or last month, something like that. So happy little treasure that I found.
It's also on Steam.
Oh, good.
Yeah, Nova 111, if anybody's curious about it. Dennis, have you played Crypt of the Necrodancer?
I haven't, and that looks like a game I would enjoy.
That seems like something that would just, like if I told you, like, hey, go buy this, or if I was like, oh, just here, have a copy of it, like, it would show up on PlayStation Plus like next month. It was something that's like really primed for it. Like, determine whether or not you're like you're down for it, but like, it combines two things you really love, which is like rhythm game and turn-based kind of stuff. Like the beat, you know, like the fact that everything is tied to the beat, like injects that that chaos into the roguelike system, like specifically, like not just roguelike in the way that it's used very loosely, but like you move, everybody else moves, like that injects that chaos that this does. I think that you'd really really dig it.
Yeah, that and Darkest Dungeon are two games that are like in that designed for me vein that I have yet to try.
Oh yeah, Darkest Dungeon because of the card game kind of side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a great game.
Yeah, that's me.
Whatever the Vita version of that, I'm really curious when that's coming out.
Is it not out yet?
I don't think it is. It may be, okay. And like, if that's the case, well, hey, I've got something to play when I go home this weekend. David, what you got?
Sure. I've been playing a lot of Dark Souls.
Nice. So, where are you?
I summoned someone in and beat the evil tree.
The corpse rotted greatwood.
Yeah, yeah. So that was just I know, like that's a thing. and then I actually, even before that, but went and, you know, beat the night guy and got to the Road of Sacrifices.
Yep.
So just before like literally like 5 minutes before the podcast, I extinguished the third fire in Farron Keep.
Oh yeah.
So
Farron Keep's fun.
Yeah, overall, I really enjoyed that area. Just like, I kind of liked the setting, and I don't know if they've done similar things in previous games, but like that was kind of like a form of Dark Souls I've not seen before.
Farron Keep is like specifically the Blight Town of this area, the Blight Town, okay, or the Valley of Defilement, or the you know, the gutter, any of those. That's like, hey, here's the poison swamp.
Sure, but okay, so they have previously done like the, you know, the you know, limiting your mobility and like the poison over time just from like being in the environment and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, that goes all the way back to Demon's Souls.
Okay. Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. Although I have to say that the leaping grooves, which, you know, are attacking because it's dark and you don't have a lantern, are complete bullshit.
I forget these guys. Can you describe what they look like to me?
They're kind of tall and lanky,
and lengthy.
They've sort of got like tentacles that are like very very reminiscent of like cancerous growths of like tumors. The wiki insists that they're supposed to be goat-like, although I can't see it.
But, like you said Gru, and like you totally meant like that's what they're called, GHRU, Grus.
Yeah. So, and the leaping ones basically have a like unblockable grab attack that has virtually no wind up, and that they can chain. And they can just take a freaking ton of damage. It's just, it's highly, highly bullshit.
Yeah, well, I mean, like that, that's the whole point of this kind of stage is like they take mobility away from you, in order to you know, increase the relative speed of the enemies. Be grateful that you can still roll, because in 5-2, and I think maybe in Blighttown, either rolls were disabled or you just or they were severely slowed down.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, what I end up doing is there's only like one of them you have to fight. And what I actually figured out is pyromancies work really well on them.
Yeah.
So pyromancy's really good bad. In this game. Oh, sorry, gone.
Pyromancy's really good in this game.
Yeah. I feel a little bit bad in that a significant number of the enemies, and in particular the more powerful enemies, I've cheesed. But on the other hand, it's kind of more fun to me to figure out ways to cheese the enemy than it is to like legitimately beat them.
Hey, turnabout's fair play, you know.
Yeah. I think my favorite though is actually right before that, in order to get down into the swamp, you have to go down this like super long ladder, and there's several knights that guard it, and the thing is they are programmed to try to follow you down the ladder, but they're not programmed to actually be able to climb ladders, so they'll literally just walk off the edge.
Yep, so you just trap them.
Yeah, so but yeah, so yeah, other than that, I've been doing that, and then a lot of farming. I'm trying to get up to I'm playing around with some of the heavy weapons, some of the like ultra great swords and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get up to being able to single wield some of them.
Yeah.
But it's fine. I don't know, is it like, not honestly, like, I'm not saying this to like just jump on the like, oh, poise, poise or MFG train, but like, without poise, there's straight up no reason to equip heavy armor, right?
Oh, for sure. Like, as it stands right now, if you're listening to this later, check and see that this has changed, but like, vitality is a dumb stat. Like, the only reason to do it is to sink some levels into being able to wear the armor that you want that looks like what you want it to look like.
Okay.
As it stands right now, it's better to just like make sure that you have any kind of armor equipped on every slot.
Right, exactly.
You know, as opposed to just this. And I apologize because like several weeks ago you brought up the poise thing, like the day that it broke, and I had no idea that it was there.
No,
and I was
problem.
Like, oh, there's
no problem.
There's no poise problem. And I was like, oh, well, I was like, well, no, that's totally not the case. I just didn't know about it.
Sure.
And I was like,
no,
oh,
no
something's
problem.
Up. I'm being staggered real easy, but so I want to make that clear. But like right now, like just make sure that you're like getting there's a fantastic video you can find that is like explaining how defense works in this, but like equipping heavy armor specifically so you don't get staggered is not a thing right now.
Right. Well, because the reason I ask is I looked at like, I roll, start out knight, and like at least as far as I am in the game, like that's actually the heaviest meaning defense, not necessarily like weight heaviest armor I've found still.
Yeah.
But like if I go and equip like, not necessarily my lightest armor, but like, you know, some like very light, you know, some of the like kind of more assassin themed armor.
Yeah.
Like it, the difference in mitigation is like 1%.
Yeah.
But,
which like at that point, you know, save that.
Right.
So you can equip a bigger sword, you know, or not
right,
even
exactly.
That, because like right now everything favors, at least in PvP, favors quicker weapons. But I don't want to discourage anybody from rolling like heavy swords, because that's fun.
I mean, I'm kind of overall doing a like you know, quality build's what I'm going for overall.
Quality being dex and strength, as opposed to, exactly. Like, not just like, hey, this is the best build, but like that, right, that yeah. is a term of art.
Right. Yes. Sorry.
No, and, I just wanted to clarify for you.
No. But overall, the reason I was going with that is I think it seems like it changes by the level, but like particularly in this area, it seems like there's not a lot of like enemies that are actually armed with like shields or weapons. And so basically having something that's just large enough to just smack an enemy down yeah. is a really good defense in this particular level.
Yes. In that level, just because everything is kind of like swamp folk.
Right. Exactly.
that's going to change pretty quick as long as you're able to pivot.
Yeah, because like when I was going through Undead Burg or whatever, it's you know what I mean. That I was doing straight up like Sword and Shield.
Yeah.
The one thing I haven't been able to figure out though is what the attack numbers actually mean, because I'll like within the great swords, you know, I'll have ones that have significantly higher like attack power that do significantly less damage than others.
That may be a function of scaling as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a letter grade that you see at the bottom of that, like check and make sure it lines up with your stats.
See, but I thought though then that letter grade was supposed to be reflected in the stat power though. Or in the attack power though, is it? Isn't that like the plus whatever or minus whatever?
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. Like, I don't know. But yeah.
I haven't paid enough attention to it in Dark Souls 3. Like to
sure,
know. Like
sure,
I
that's fine.
I always look at just kind of like, oh, what number do I see above the enemy's head with this weapon as compared to the other weapon?
Sure. Okay. So yeah, so I don't know. Like overall, I'm enjoying it. I don't know. I haven't really screwed around much with any of the like factions or anything like that. I don't know if that comes into its like more prominence at some point or what.
Not in the story. They just kind of changed the multiplayer.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because like every so often, like I'll come upon an NPC or something that seems to be like allied with a certain faction, and they'll kind of like exposition me a little bit.
Yeah. So like it'll change NPC stories. Like they're, you know, eventually you're going to get to a faction that if you join it, an NPC is just going to say, you know what, fuck you. but otherwise, most of it's just like, hey, if I get invaded, I want to have somebody come help me.
Yeah. Which is definitely a thing, because I know still not sold on the whole PvP thing, but you know.
I love it so much.
Really?
Yeah.
I know if they did not punish you for disconnecting, I would probably disconnect on people.
Yeah.
But
I mean, different strokes.
Yeah. That. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, like I don't think I've gotten any NBC or any PvP encounters that haven't been like NPC or any invasions that haven't been NPCs so far.
Yeah.
So,
I'm going to be curious what you think about the boss of Farron Keep, actually,
sure.
Because I love it. It's super good, at least in my estimation for it. But I don't know, just like knowing that you don't like the bosses as much, the way that this articulates, I think might get around that.
Sure, that'll be interesting to see. Yeah. What I'm at this point is again from doing the wiki, people seem to really suggest pausing where I'm at and like farming some of the dark wraiths to get their weapon.
The dark sword's great.
That's kind of what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, some of the upgrades. I will say I understand why they did it, but I'm a little bit disappointed that they've de-emphasized like upgrades and items as much as they have in this one.
They took away armor augmentations, which were always like you did it until you got enough stability or enough poise, which like
sure.
Well, doesn't matter anymore. So
right,
but But like, it's still totally a thing with weapons. It's just kind of like, oh, I need to be like roughly keeping pace with where I'm at in the game.
Sure. I guess until basically like Swamp of Sorrows, I don't think I'd replaced literally a single item. What I just got the Dragon Crest Shield, and that's the first shield I've gotten that hasn't been like some huge tower shield that's been better than the starting Knight Shield.
Yeah, the nice starting gear is amazing.
Okay, so that could just be like a process of like what class I rolled.
That's that's definitely a thing.
Okay, fair enough.
Both, so. I think the Knight and the Adept start with either 100 or very high physical defense.
Okay.
Hey, Ben, Dennis, you still there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I just want to make sure.
So, quick question, and maybe this is, like, blatant spoilers, but, like, is this supposed to be, like, the same areas I've been going through in Dark Souls 1?
No.
Okay, it's supposed to be a different place?
Yes.
Okay.
Until it's not.
Until it's not, fair enough. Yeah.
It plays really fast and loose with it. Like,
okay,
bring your own interpretation to it, because there's very little in the text to, like, say yay or nay. Okay. Same thing with, like, Dark Souls 2.
Right, yeah, because, I mean, they definitely use, like, different names for everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, stuff like that, but like other, like presumably Firelink Shrine is Firelink Shrine,
yeah. It's not, because that could just that may not be a proper noun and just a name for that enough. Kind of place. Yeah,
fair enough. And like there's definitely a lot of equivalency.
Yes, which is totally that's just what happens in Dark Souls 3.
Sure. Yeah. I know. I'm. I kind of like that they brought back like the geography corresponding to itself.
Oh yeah, yeah. Even though it's still a sprawl, there's
There's a cool one. Wolf Tower place. Like getting up to the top of that and being able to like look back and like directly trace back. Pretty much everywhere you've been so far is pretty cool.
Or like the starting point in the Undead Settlement, you can actually like look back and see all of the Flame Towers in Farron's Keep.
Yeah. I actually noticed that, and that was one that like that was one of the big ones that I was like, I wonder if I'll get to those.
Of course you will.
Yeah, well, yeah. I do want to know where I get to the Icy Mountains, because that's the one thing that was like a completely different biome.
Before we go away from Dark Souls 3, I want to make sure this is super cool. The next guest on Bonfireside Chat is going to be Stuart Wellington from the Flophouse.
Sweet.
Yes, I'm so excited about it. Oh, man. So that's going to be fun. Did you have anything else about Dark Souls 3, David?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. Ben, how about you? I can tag team with one of yours.
Okay, so let's do Uncharted 4.
Okay.
How far are you into it?
So I just finished the, for lack of a better word, the Italian job.
Okay, yeah. Yes. Okay, fair.
So it's like, I finished off at like chapter 6 or 7 or something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, like so like in the arc of the story, it's the first kind of like real mission that happens after like all of the Rising action starts up. Like, okay, all of the pieces of history are in place, and now this is like, okay, this is all happening in present day, and we are kind of like advancing the, you know, all of the key players are in place at the moment.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about the game. Like, I've already beat the game, so like I don't know what to... I want to do a spoiler cast of it.
We can totally do that. We can totally do that after I finish it. Sure. So can I lead this, because I think I have a good sense for like what's novel about this. Ben, I'm disappointed that you didn't tell me this was a grappling hook game.
Okay.
Like,
is that a genre now?
If there's anything that anybody should know about me, it's that grappling hooks are my special thing.
Really?
Really? You might like Dying Light.
No, I just like, so far I've not seen it like really integrated into like combat, although I could totally see like, oh, here's a post in the middle of the room, swing around and like totally hoth these guys. But just the way that it changes, the way that it changes the space is great. And you know, it's presented as something that Nathan's brother taught him in the past, so I'm like, I could have been grappling hooking all along.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with it is, yeah. He apparently knew this the entire time, but just decided not to do it in any of the previous games.
Yeah.
Well, dude, he was always like, you know, after a plane crash or something like that, he didn't just have a grappling hook.
His shoulder was dislocated.
Yeah.
His shoulder was old. He was always out of its socket. So I like that. I like that a lot just because, you know, it forces you to look at the environment in a different way. Good.
I think the other big mechanic they added is sliding and jumping, where like jumping on a surface that you will slide down it for some amount of time, and you'll either need to jump away or grappling hook away to something else.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like a QTE a little bit. It's like, okay, well, you're either going to drop into the abyss or do this thing that will save you.
Mm-hmm. You'll either hear a voice over your friend crying that you have died, or you will just go on to the next part of the game.
Nice. One thing that I noticed, so I never played
Drake. Drake. Drake.
Sorry. So, oh no.
Very apropos. You gotta do it in Sully's voice though. Drake. Drake. No, it's okay. So I never played Uncharted 3. Okay. Did Uncharted 3 have the stealth marking?
I don't think so. I think that was a new mechanic in this one as well.
Yeah, they stole that wholesale from Metal Gear Solid 5, and I'm so happy they did.
What is this?
So
you can mark people, and it'll follow them persistently as they do their patrols.
Yeah. So if you're in stealth mode,
that was a feature in The Last of Us. Prominently,
I can't remember. So, like,
are we talking like the X-ray vision thing, like Fallout does?
It's not an X-ray. I guess a lot of stuff has done this. So in Last of Us, I remember you had the super hearing mode where you could see stuff through the Far Cry does this as well. Like Far Cry has the marking stuff. Like Last of Us has, okay, you can like crouch down and like see enemies through walls. This if you have line of sight to somebody and you're in stealth mode, you can hold down like L2, like aim towards them and then press in the right stick to like put a little triangle above them. So you kind of like, oh, if I spotted you, I always know where you're at.
That was in, I guess, specifically The Last of Us multiplayer was a large part of it is, you know, if you saw someone, it was kind of team editing almost that teammate. You point them out. And it was actually an ability that you could, you know, depending on your character build, put points into and like make it so that it would mark them for longer periods of time or so that the mark would splash and you would see anyone else near them. Like
Invest in hearing aids.
Yeah. So, and very much it was like a triangle above their head. So I think they cut their teeth on that mechanic in The Last of Us.
Yeah.
It was good. I'm glad it made it through.
Yeah. There's a lot of Last of Us DNA in this, I feel like.
Which,
same game
I cannot think of a scenario in which that would ever be a bad thing.
Oh, it's totally not. So like I'm thinking about like Uncharted 2, and I may be, you know, incorrect in this, but like there was not an awful lot of interior in Uncharted 2. It was either you were on city streets or you were in like ruins and stuff. With this, at least so far, and you know, it's kind of because they've very wisely kept the stakes low at the start. Like I've only killed like 5 people. But like most of it's been like going through inhabited areas, and they even do it's kind of cheap, but you walk through Nathan Drake's house and it's kind of like, oh, like they have a water cooler, probably because they have like well water or something, like all those different details that you saw in Uncharted Fungal Edition. In The Last of Us, it's kind of like, oh, they just took that and brought it forward. Like it's a real Pixar like thing. Like, oh, well, we figured out how to do hair, so we're gonna make The Incredibles, and now we're going to just like put that in everything. And it really benefits it. Like, you're walking through some of these really awesome, like, you know, built for human spaces that are not that are not like ruins and stuff. Like, this is such a fucking pretty game.
Yes. Yeah. The art style is on point for sure. Yeah. And this is the first game I've seen with, yeah, as you said, you were, I believe you've gotten to a point where there's like an art show, or I don't want to say too much, but
it's like an auction for an artifact.
There's crowd scenes that you've
seen. Yeah.
Yeah. And that seems to be a new mechanic in this game. That was the previous ones.
I caught my breath when I walked into that room. I was like, I know this is a thing. Like, you see this in places, but like, I don't know, like this is something that will always get me, because it feels like the number of bodies on a screen is the thing that is most tied to, like, oh, we just have better hardware now.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. Yeah.
And I think another mechanic they've introduced in this one, which it may not be too noteworthy, but tall grass, where you can do stealth mode, where you can kind of roll from tall grass to tall grass or to stay hidden.
Or as I call them, the killing fields.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I don't know. The mechanics that they've added are kind of bizarre, but they work, and, you know, they kind of make it a more easy to play experience. So I'm fine with it.
Like, I'm down for it. Like, so I remember, like, Uncharted 2, for as great of a game as it is, if you're down with Uncharted's thing, like, enemies are still like bullet sponges, at least right now, because it's something that can change. Obviously, they can always increase the health in enemies. Like, when I headshot somebody, like, I hit their off button. There's like,
yeah. Down. Yeah,
which,
and
actually,
I do...
isn't that realistic, but that's one other thing.
but
wait,
I mean,
what?
headshots, particularly with like pistol caliber, don't work nearly as well as people think they do.
so realism aside, it, you know, I'm aiming for the head because I want to kill them quicker, and right, to kill them as quickly as possible using that, and not have to like sink 3 or 5 shots into somebody's dome feels good from a gameplay side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the reticle feedback where it's like an X if you hit them, but then also like a star if you hit them in the head.
Yep.
And then it's also
color-coded. You get a gold star.
The reticle is also color-coded based on whether or not you're hitting their armor or whether you're hitting their health.
It's so subtle, too. It's like a couple of frames.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's cool. Yeah, I mean, they have done a lot of really good things with this game. Like, it is a technically sound game, I will say.
So, it sounds like there's another shoe there that I haven't gotten to yet. Like, is there a downside?
That shoe will come with the spoiler cast.
It's like vehicle shit or what?
Oh, we'll save it. We'll talk about that part later.
I want to know.
You're asking Ben this question. You're
honest. Yeah. It's like talking to a brick wall.
this might be spoiler casty, but I've never actually made it that far in an Uncharted game. Do they all eventually go off the? Kind of off the rails, Tomb Raider style, in terms of like randomly becoming supernatural.
In terms of Uncharted 1, 2, and 3, yes.
Okay.
Who knows what happens in Uncharted 4?
In an Uncharted, well, I'm not going to comment.
Because you're not going to acknowledge that Uncharted 3 exists?
Well, Uncharted what? I'll rationalize it by saying I don't want to spoil anyone who would play Uncharted 3. But.
Yeah, I mean, like you can get the Nathan Drake collection or whatever, like that. That apparently is a good product.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. So, like, talking about the story a little bit, it's no secret that that Nathan's brother is involved in this. Yes. Sam Drake. I like that. Because it's such a sitcom thing, like the ne'er-do-well brother rolls into town.
And wait, like, Sam? His name is Sam?
Sam Drake? Yeah.
What was the main character's name in The Last of Us?
Joel.
Oh, Joel. Okay, for some reason I thought it was Sam. I was gonna be like, they reused the freaking name? They already reused the actor. All right, never mind.
They're actually the same character. Plot twist.
Yep, they take place in the same universe.
But you meet his brother in The Last of Us, so that would be really weird.
He looks really similar, doesn't he? He's got kind of the same, like the same hair a little bit.
Yes, but does he tuck his shirt halfway in? Because that is the defining character trait.
I like that. I will defend the half tuck because you want asymmetry in a character design.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Plus, it shows he's a bad boy.
Yeah,
he doesn't care about tucking all of his shirt in.
Just more comfortable this way.
But he's still kind of classy.
Yeah.
Half classy.
Yeah. But I just, you know, like...
It's definitely a trope, yeah.
Yeah. For a game and for a series that is very much like, oh, here is like National Treasure, Da Vinci Code, Tomb Raider, like all this kind of stuff, like rolled up, like they kind of sell human drama. Like a majority of the time you're like seeing people who have close relationships talking to each other, mm-hmm. and like that kind of like interpersonal stuff happening, like that's all really cool. And that's sold really well, and just kind of getting that history and getting that sense of like jealousy between Sam and Sully and all that kind of stuff. Like I'm down for it. Like I'm invested in these characters, even though I've only ever played one Uncharted game before. So
which was the one that you played before?
Two.
All right. So you're playing the good one. So you're, this is good. Yeah.
I'm on the Star Trek plan. Yeah.
Yeah. This game is definitely, the narrative game is better than Uncharted 3, and it's more aligned with like Uncharted 2 in terms of quality. So,
nice.
Yeah,
cool. Well, that is that is a wonderful thing to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything else you wanted to say about Uncharted?
There's plenty I want to talk about, but I think I kind of want to save it for a spoiler cast, and then we can kind of delve into it.
Yeah, so. I'll talk to you once I finish it.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. What else did you play? I know you said you had two.
Yeah, so the other game that I played is I picked up FTL after I beat Uncharted a couple weeks ago.
I've seen you play this.
Yeah, oh, that's right. I sent you guys a picture of my first crew, which I named after all of you guys.
In grand tradition.
Mm-hmm. They died really quickly. So because... as soon as someone boarded my ship, I had no idea what to do, and so they all got beaten to death.
Well, we all caught fire, and you didn't know to blow open the bulkheads.
Yeah.
Wait, is that seriously the only way the game has for you to put out fires?
No, if you walk into a room with a fire, you'll start putting it out with an extinguisher, or you can open up whatever the room is to space and all the oxygen will leave and you can put out the fire that way.
So yeah. This takes place in the far future where fire suppression systems haven't been invented.
They forgot it. It's so far into the future that it's the past.
Cost too much power to make a fire system. Gotta get those guns going. But so I guess so the game's good. I've only played and beaten the game on easy mode. I tried a normal mode and got crushed, like even after beating the game a whole bunch on easy mode.
That's a feat, man. Like that last boss on easy mode is still like a bear.
Yeah, just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Literally, you get attacked by a giant bear.
Yeah,
bear
the second stage, all the bears are boarding your ship and then attacking your members. It's terrible.
Where do they get them?
Yeah, I don't know. It's
Space Russia. They get them from Space Russia.
But I guess the point of the game after you've kind of mastered it with one ship is the goal is to kind of play all the different ships that you can unlock and beat it with all the different ships that you can unlock. And so I've gotten through, I think, about five or six of the different ships, and there's still about two that I haven't unlocked yet, so I'm still trying to play through with those.
Yeah.
I've kind of slowed down a little bit. I played a whole bunch of it the last 2 weeks, but I've gotten to the point where I've kind of get the pattern, and so I'm okay with kind of not playing as much of it. But
yeah,
it's been a lot of fun, though.
Hmm.
I think the most handedly I beat the boss battle was with the... the Mantises race, the race where you board the other person's ship and then kill all their crew members as a way to win.
And then you loot their ship?
You get the same amount of loot as you would as if you blew up their ship, which doesn't make as much sense. Yeah, you would think.
I feel you should be able to pawn their ship off parts of their ship. You know?
Totally agree.
Mine now.
Yeah. Because you've captured an entire ship. It's like, you should be able to sell that and like make a whole bunch of money, but not the case. But that's okay. I still was able to win with that ship.
Mantis people are actually communists.
So I was able to get four Mantis people, and on the B ship type for that, they have like a four teleporter. And so with that, like, it's pretty unstoppable because you can pretty much wipe out any sort of crew with that as long as you put them in a four room and, I don't know, kind of manage which rooms you attack with that. So
I don't know. So that was fun. I still need to unlock the rock people. I haven't got that. And I think I just unlocked the slug ship. And so I need to go through and beat the game with that.
What's the slug racial quirk?
I know one of their quirks is they can see adjacent rooms. So like they don't start off with a camera system so that you can't see in all the rooms. So the way it works for anyone who hasn't played this game is each room in the ship kind of has a different function. One might be an engine room, one might be a weapons room, one might be whatever. But one of the rooms in most of the ships is like a camera room. And what it does is it allows you to view in all the different rooms in the ship. If that room gets destroyed, you can no longer view in all the rooms. You can only view in rooms that you have people in.
It's like a line of sight thing.
Yeah. And so the problem is like if there's a fire going on somewhere in the ship and you don't have a person in it, you don't know that there's a fire there and you don't know that it's spreading. So there's definitely problems that can arise if you don't have a camera room. The slug special ability is they can see into adjacent rooms. Hmm. So a single person kind of gives you a glimpse into like four or five rooms, depending upon what room they're in.
Does that work diagonally? Like, can you see like one up and over?
It's only orthogonally, so it's only doors that are connected to the room that you're in.
Okay.
You only see into those rooms. So
now,
go ahead.
Sorry, is this the game where you don't know the layout of the enemy ship so that like when you're like targeting an area on the enemy ship, you don't necessarily initially know what like systems you're targeting?
No, you always know what systems it is. You just don't know if there are people in it or not. And so, if you advance your camera room or upgrade it or whatever, you can see into the enemy ship. And then if you advance it even more, you can see more detailed things like how quickly their guns are charging and things like that.
Okay. I wonder what game I'm thinking of.
If I remember correctly, the strategy for taking out other ships was pretty one-dimensional in that. And I might be saying it slightly wrong because it's been so long since I've played, but like you focus on their shields until their shields are down, and then you focus on
weapons.
The engine until the engine blows up, or yeah, whatever. There was like a very clear heuristic, and it didn't really change ship to ship.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends. Like, there's some situations, like if a ship, it'll tell you like, oh, a ship's charging its engines, is going to try and jump off, and sometimes you have to sacrifice going for the shield and just go strictly for the engine to try and slow them down. Other times, yeah, I mean, it depends on kind of what your weapon layout is. But by and large, yes, you definitely want to do shield first. There doesn't seem to be a huge downside to doing that. But
so
it's kind
does
of
something the, bad happen if a ship gets away?
It depends.
You don't get their like resources.
There's always that downside. And then other cases, if it's like a scout ship, sometimes it can warn the fleet that's pursuing you. And so it'll, I think, double the probability of running into a ship the next time you jump. So, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's a super fun game. I think my first interaction with it, I know you guys had talked about it. I think Cole, I think you might've been the first person to play it on the podcast. Maybe
like this is like, it's not an old game, but it's 2012, 2013. It's one of the first, like, oh, we funded this on Kickstarter and it's an amazing game.
Yeah. So I think my only interaction outside of hearing about it on the podcast is I saw it during Duckspring because I think I forget who was streaming it at the time, but I think two different people were playing that game like in the wee hours of night on a Saturday night. So that was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if you're set up to stream, but I was actually going to say that it's probably pretty good streaming material.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to look into doing that. Yeah. So yeah,
that's awesome. Like I'm happy you like that because I remember like what was it a couple weeks ago we said oh you should totally play this now that you have the thing. I'm gonna take credit for you liking this thing.
Okay.
Oh man,
well played.
Yeah, is that all?
That's all I got.
Okay. Since I kind of rolled mine in with yours, I'm going to make like a different recommendation. It's not a game, but I think that a coffee table book is an amazing thing. Like, especially, like a kind of book that is meant to, like, you know, just, like, look at some pictures and, like, you know, read some cool stuff, maybe a couple pages at a time. I've really gone down a rabbit hole with three of these. The Atlas of Remote Islands, the Atlas of Cursed Places, and the Atlas of Abandoned Cities.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Do these sit on your coffee table?
No, they're on my bedside table, actually. Like when I'm waking up or when I'm going to sleep, I'll just say, I want to hear about this awful place.
Well, I mean, you put the coffee table books on your bedside table in the hopes that it'll lure coffee there overnight.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's ready when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah, my animate coffee cups.
Yeah.
this is super bizarre, but like, I don't know where else to talk about these, but they have been amazing to just like read about these kind of just like fucked up places. Like,
that's really cool.
Specifically, like, the island one is, like, beautiful places and, like, awesome stories about, like, indigenous peoples and, you know, nuclear test sites and stuff like that. But, you know, like, any of them are really cool. So I want to, you know, I want to bring that to people's lives.
I remember growing up, we had, at the place that, like, I did daycare, had this group. There's this book of, like, it's, like, a children's encyclopedia. And one of the books was just called, like, Places to Know. And it was, like, that sort of thing of just, like, you know, this random selection of, like, you know, just, like, weird, you know, weird things in the world. You know, you know, ghost towns and, you know, stuff like that. And it was pretty awesome. So yeah. I could see this being pretty epic.
Yeah, it's like a book of lists or an almanac kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
it's a...
Yeah.
I don't know, it's really cool. So I just wanted to bring that up. Especially like if you play a lot of video games and you want to know about awesome places.
See, cool. I'm kind of surprised, not to like too overtly tie this back into our normal themes, but I'm kind of surprised there hasn't been like a Dark Souls coffee table book.
I mean, like they're the Design Works books.
Oh, is that a thing?
Yeah. It's like books of concept art and stuff like that, and also like interviews and things.
Okay.
Yeah. So are you all ready to button it up?
Yeah, let's.
Okay. Yeah. That has been level number 151, a little bit longer than usual. But again, I apologize for being away last week. We're going to try not to do that again for a little while. Let us see here. What can you do? What can you do? Word of mouth is especially important for us on this show, even within the network, honestly. So if you like the show and you know people who are down with podcasts and gaming podcasts in particular, sharing the word of the level goes a very long way for us, and we appreciate everybody who has done that so far and is considering doing that right now as we say this. But otherwise, there's kind of the usual stuff, the ratings, the reviews, liking us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. All of that. There's a P.O. box. That is P.O. box. It's a duckfeed.tv. P.O. box 27105, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45227. A couple weeks ago, when I announced my employment troubles, somebody sent me like a thing of like vinyl duckfeed clings. There are a bunch of them, so I'm going to send them out to other hosts. So that they get them. If you send something to me that is meant for somebody else, I will forward it along. But that is kind of a way to, if you have like a letter or, something else like that, that is a way to get it to us.
Hey.
What am I thinking of? What am I thinking of? Am I missing anything, guys?
I think that's it. Seconded on sharing it with a friend.
Yes.
Yeah. This is, I guess, our official thing, but it seems like we've all been kind of trying to do some streaming.
Yes.
So, no real rhyme or reason to that, but just, you know, keep your eyes open. It's something I think we're all trying to, you know, do a little bit more of.
Definitely. And a great way to learn about that is to go to, if you're a backer on Patreon, go to the Slack, either in the Level channel or on the Streamy Weenie channel. That is streamy-weenie. you can see us put that up. I'm gonna start streaming more now that I've kind of gotten out of Fallout New Vegas. Well, hell's the wrong word, but you know, that's a time consuming game. Dropping 70 hours on a game in the course of 3 weeks, that's a lot.
Yeah.
But definitely pay attention to that streaming stuff. It's a lot of fun, and we enjoy it when you watch. Cool. What were you gonna say, Ben?
I called it Limbo instead of Hell.
Ah, there we go. Cool. So I've been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia, at D Furia on Twitter, and GreenLaser73 on Twitch.
Mm.
I've been David Meismith at Meismith777 on Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah, and stick around for some titles. So yeah, what titles do we have here?
1 second.
I forgot to write down this time. Dang it.
There were a lot of them too. So many I forgot to like write down all of them.
I've got Rock Genocide and Kenny Loggins. Those are the two obvious ones. I also wrote down Uncharted Fungal Edition. Just struck my fancy for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ben, how about you?
All right, so the one that struck my fancy that might not land is I got Pretty But Directionless is one. I got Technical Virginity.
Oh, no.
I got Creepy Watson. I got Heroin with the W-I-N. And I got Baby. Huh?
Sorry, go on.
And I got Baby Vape.
As a side note, do you guys, like... Cool, Ben. Have you seen the things with Watson in these games?
The videos of Watson appearing right behind you when you look away?
Yeah, because like he's programmed to like, you know, as your assistant, like always be there because like he's kind of their tip function. Yeah. But like he's overtly just programmed to always be right behind you.
Yeah, he'll just close the distance. You'll like outrun him, and then he'll yeah. I know. And creepy, like I know.
Well, and you can even do things like you can even like do things where it's physically wouldn't be possible for him to get somewhere.
Build a brick and mortar wall. Yeah.
Cask of Amontillado him. Yep.
Yeah.
Did you ever
sorry that was kind of yeah
no it's good, like if I didn't know about it I would want to know about it. Yeah. Ben, did you have anything else?
That's all I had.
I really like Baby Vape.
I like Baby Vape too. In a better context I would have loved Heroin, but I just don't think it landed.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that like it half works in sound and it half works in visual.
Wait, who is this?
Heroin with the W-I-N.
Yeah, talking about like being addicted to guides once you pop the seal.
Okay.
The two that I had are Kenny Loggins and the Shrek is Strong. I don't like. I'm kind of fond of Baby Vape.
I like Baby Vape.
Yeah, yeah. Go for it.
Any
we should accompany it with a Surgeon General's warning, but
yeah. So is there any opposition to Baby Vape?
Only for mad.
The motion is passed.